This is episode 29 of Dear Analyst, and in this episode, I'm going to be discussing dynamic array functions and formulas that spill into your range in Excel. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to read a quick PSA about COVID-19 and the current crisis. It's the beginning of April now, and we're heavily into the quarantine here, at least in New York City. And I wanted to read a quick PSA from our good friends at Burberry, who gave us this PSA, gave me this PSA. So COVID-19, better known as coronavirus, has spread throughout the world. Symptoms of this respiratory disease may include fever, cough, and shortness of breath. These symptoms may show up 2 to 14 days after exposure. If you're experiencing these symptoms and have come in contact with or are in an area with an ongoing outbreak, please call a hotline and or consult a physician. Clean and disinfect high-touch surfaces. For more information, please visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Thank you. Okay, so this episode is a little more into the new feature in Excel that, well, relatively new. It came out in late 2018. And I think it was announced in September 2018. And the dynamic array is a very interesting and very big change from how formulas are usually created in Excel. So I'm going to go back and talk about, this actually ties into the last episode about filling a formula down. I'm going to talk to everyone here about how you typically would write a formula and then copy that to other cells in your file. So let's say you have two numbers in columns A and column B, and in column C, you want to add the two numbers up. The formula would just be A1 plus B1, and then enter, and then you have the sum of the two numbers. Now, if you want to have that formula applied to all the cells below that cell that has the formula, you can drag and drop the bottom right-hand handle of the cell down. You can double-click in the right-hand handle of the cell. Or, as I discussed in the last episode, you can select all the empty cells below the cell that has the value, that has the formula, including the cell that has the formula, and then press Control D to fill the formula down. And then you have in the subsequent cells A2 plus B2, A3 plus B3, so on and so forth. So that is how traditionally most people have come to learn Excel. And that's how I learned, and it's the most precise, in my opinion, the most precise way you can define formulas, because you can define a formula for an individual cell, and especially for a financial model or any kind of data model, you typically are creating one-off formulas around your worksheet, and you're not always filling formulas down. But I think given the more use cases of big data and data coming from databases, Microsoft saw a need to create this function. This is a new feature that allows you to calculate formulas across a range of cells very quickly that also output a range of cells very quickly. So that's the most basic concept of writing formula. Now, if you skip a bunch of levels and get into array entered formulas, this is a concept that I've taught in classes that are more intermediate or advanced use of Excel. And the key thing here is with an array entered formula, you essentially are telling Excel, I have a set of inputs that is a range of cells, an array of cells, and the output is also going to be a range of cells or an array of cells. And this goes against everything that we usually think about when it comes to writing a formula in Excel, because typically when you write a formula, you expect the result to be one value in one cell. So if you take the sum formula and you sum A1 to A10, you expect the value, the result, to be one cell, one value. Now, there are certain formulas, that require you to array enter a formula in. So for instance, one formula I teach in my classes is using the frequency formula, finding out how many times a given value falls within a bucket or a range, I guess you can say it. And so the tricky thing about this frequency formula is that there's no really easy way in Excel to tell you that this has to be a formula if you want it to perform the way you want it to perform, that you need to array enter it into a cell. So the key here is, and just to walk you through how this works at a high level, if you want to, let's say you have your buckets in cells C1 to C10. These are buckets from like 1 to 10, 10 to 20, to 20 to 30, and you want to find how many times your entire data set falls within those buckets. So maybe in a population of 1,000 students, 5 fall in the bucket of 1 to 10, 25 fall in the bucket of 10 to 20, so on and so forth. So the process, I would say, is pretty cumbersome in terms of getting this to work, is you have to first select all the cells that contain the range where you want to output the result of the frequency formula. So unlike regular formulas, you can't just have your cursor in one cell because you want to output the value to multiple cells. So you select, let's say, 10 empty cells that you want to output the result of the frequency formula. At this point, you have to have your first cell, the first cell in this range has to be empty. You then press F2 on the PC or Control U on the Mac. So you're now in edit formula mode in the first cell of this empty range of cells. But the key thing here is that you still have all your empty cells selected. You're just in edit formula mode now. Then you start writing the frequency formula. You start write frequency, and then you put in the inputs. The inputs are the values of your data range. Then you put in the buckets, which are the 1 to 10, 10 to 20, 20, 30, close parentheses. And then here's when you, while you're still in edit formula mode, you press Control, Shift, and Enter, return, and then that would output the frequencies of all your values into that range of cells that you had selected. So it's kind of like you're basically using this formula, this array entered formula technique to output the results of your formula into multiple cells all at the same time, instead of writing the formula in one cell and then dragging and dropping it down. If you actually try to write the formula in one cell for the frequency formula in one cell and then drag and drop it down, it actually will return completely irrelevant results because it's not the way that the frequency formula works. So that's how you currently write array entered formulas. And I think for someone who is new to Excel and new to writing these formulas, knowing how to write that formula in those steps I just described is pretty difficult. And you're also wondering, why do I have to do it this way? How do I know which formulas need to do this technique of array, of Control, Shift, Enter? Who knows? So I think as a response to that, they introduced in 2018 the dynamic arrays, which the first thing is that they introduced 7 new functions that allow you to do these array entered formulas without having to actually use the Control Shift Enter technique. So you have things like filter, rand array, sequence, single, sort by, and unique. I think these are all brand new functions, and there are functions that you traditionally would have to basically array enter in using a combination of other functions that are not as simple as these 7. So for instance, if you want to find the unique values in a dataset, you typically will do remove duplicates. That's actually what I do, is just do remove duplicates. But now with unique formula, you can actually just quickly input all the cells that you want to find that may have duplicate values. And then the unique function is a dynamic array function that will just return the unique values from that data set. Now, notice that with a unique function, it wouldn't make sense for the unique function to return one cell with one value, because you want to find all the unique values from your list of 1,000 values. So you can see how these functions, just by the nature of what they do, they have to return a set of values, in this case, a unique set of values from your entire data set. So the one key thing about the dynamic arrays is that you're basically entering the formula. You hit enter, and then instead of the result spitting out in one cell, all the empty rows, all the empty cells below that cell where you're entering the formula will also fill up with values, or quote unquote, spill into the data range. I'm going to get into a little more of an esoteric topic, and this is called implicit intersection. What implicit intersection is Excel has a formula engine that kind of behind the scenes calculates a value for you if you are if the formula you provide to Excel has multiple cells selected. So for instance, if you write the formula, if you have numbers in rows 1 through 5 and you're in cell, these numbers are in cells A1 to A5, in cell B3, an empty cell, you write A1 colon A5 plus 1. What do you think will happen? So the first reaction is, oh, maybe it will take like all the values in A1 and A5, add them together, and then add 1 to that. Well, that's incorrect because we didn't write the sum formula. All we're writing is equals A1 colon A5 plus 1. So since you're in cell B3, what implicit intersection does is it says, okay, you're in row 3 of the spreadsheet. Instead of taking all the values A1, A5, I'm just going to take the value in A3 because you're on row 3 and add the number 1 to that value. There's some other nuances about implicit intersection, but the long story short is that this is what happened there. When people write formulas that are taking into account multiple cells, they don't realize that Excel sometimes does behind the scene work to get you what you need. Now, what happens when you introduce the array entered formula trick? Well, that is when you can actually output a range of cells, even though the input is also a range of cells too. So what control shift enter array entered formulas do is that they disable implicit intersection, so that you can manipulate multiple values of inputs as the range. Whereas when implicit intersection is turned on, which is like what's happening 99% of the time in Excel, Excel finds the row where you're operating on and takes that as the reference for the formula. Now there are there's a lot of use cases for implicit intersection. You can get into Excel tables where, implicit intersection also, it does not happen. You're basically like referencing columns of data, which is more similar to like SQL and Tableau. I'm not going to get too deep into that. Now, the reason why I bring up implicit intersection is because, well, first of all, like, even knowing the fact that array entered formulas disable implicit intersection is not that discoverable to the average Excel user. I didn't even really know what implicit intersection was until I read about it. But like, it's one of those things where, having used Excel so much, I kind of see like, oh, when I try to apply a formula that I think is taking in multiple cells, like Excel kind of figures out a way to find the answer. And like, I just kind of noticed that pattern, and that pattern is there. And little did I know that that pattern actually has a name called implicit intersection. One issue with the spill formula is that you get this spill error, hashtag spill. And if you've ever come across an error in Excel, they're sometimes very hard to decipher. You have things like hashtag value, hashtag ref, hashtag name. So this is just another introduction, another formula error that new Excel users have to become aware of. And what happens is, if you have a spill error, means that you were trying to spill a dynamic function into a bunch of cells, but there's a hard-coded value somewhere in that spill range. And you have to delete that hard-coded value in order to have the spill properly in order to have that dynamic array function properly spill down into the rest of the cells. So just some new patterns to get used to. I mean, I'm still thinking that this introduces some complexity for the average Excel user, but I think Microsoft took a really intentional stance on saying we need to make the ability, give people the ability to create these, give new Excel users the ability to create these formulas more quickly and more less prone to human error. And I think this is a good step in the right direction, but I think if you don't intentionally try to learn what these dynamic functions do, then you could just be wondering. What I'm trying to say is I think if you don't know what array entered formulas are and you're applying these formulas right from the get-go, you may not understand the underlying reason why these new dynamic array functions work, because you don't have the background history of like knowing how implicit intersection works and how array entered formulas work. Just kind of a thought about the feature, in my opinion. Then you get into even, I think my guess is that these seven dynamic array functions were meant to help new users of Excel get used to the platform. But even for advanced Excel users, there's a lot of interesting nuances about how you can make dynamic arrays work for you. So for instance, one of the things is the at symbol or the at operator. So since you don't need to use Control Shift Enter to array enter a formula into Excel, there are some times where you still want to There are times when you still want implicit intersection to work, meaning there are still times when you want the result of the formula to return one value. Now, the problem is that with this new feature, most formulas will have the dynamic array feature, and then it will spill into the multiple values below where that dynamic array function is used. And now for more advanced users, you have the at operator. And by using the at operator in the formula, it will enable implicit intersection again for your dynamic array function, and it disables all the kind of array features of the dynamic function. So this is basically saying if you have a bunch of formulas that you are comfortable, that you know how they work before dynamic arrays come into place, once dynamic arrays turn on in your Excel file, those formulas may not work as intended as they originally were written for most of Excel's history. And so what you need to do is input this new at symbol to tell Excel, I don't want to take advantage or don't want to use these dynamic array functionality. I want my formulas to operate the way they always have. So just some more complexity to add the at symbol. So I think for the advanced users, this could lead to some issues because it could be very confusing to know when you want a formula to return one value to a cell and when you want a formula to return multiple values to a cell. Typically speaking, in a model, you want one value to return in a cell, but I haven't seen this in a model in the wild yet, but like I wonder if like a model that expects one cell to be in a value, whether or not that dynamic function will return multiple values and spill down once that new feature is turned on that file. And just looking at the blog post where this feature was announced, here's some language from the blog post, which is, I think, also difficult for someone to comprehend, because if you have a big Excel file where there's a bunch of functions, having kind of vague language like this, I think, makes it hard to really figure out what functions are being affected by this new change. So they say, generally speaking, functions that return multi-cell ranges or arrays will be prefixed with at symbol if they were authored in an older version of Excel. So I think this kind of dispels the fears that I just described, because it looks like by default, if you were on an old version of Excel and you have a formula that's meant to return a multi-cell range or an array that will have an at symbol by default, because you probably didn't write that formula originally with the intention of having multiple cell ranges returned. The blog post then goes on to say, can you safely remove the at symbol? It depends on what the part of the parts of the formula to the right of the at symbol returns. If it returns a single value, the most common case, there will be no change by removing the at symbol. If it returns a range or array, removing the at will cause it to spill to the neighboring cells. And that's, I think, the biggest issue is you might see all these at symbols in your formulas. Is it safe to remove that at symbol in your formula? And the answer that Microsoft gives is that it depends. It all depends on whether or not the original intention of that formula was supposed to return a single value, or if it was supposed to return multiple values. And then if you accidentally remove that at symbol, you're basically going to get the spill functionality that the dynamic array functions will provide. That's kind of like my take on the dynamic array functions. I haven't really played around with it that much, to be honest. I'm still kind of, I think there's a part of me that says like, oh, this is like just the old way of, I'm still used to doing the old way of doing things. I don't like the new ways. But maybe if I experiment with the feature more, I'll get more used to it. I might be using it more often. I do think using things like sort and unique will be really interesting. Even the filter function. In Coda, where I work, the filter function is probably the most used function that I've come across in terms of getting a filter data set. This is one of those things. It's such a breaking change to Excel, in my opinion. And I think it's just a matter of the old guard kind of getting used to the new ways of doing things. And I think this is, again, a shift in the way how Excel can become more approachable to new users who are probably being confronted with big data sets, with needing ways to quickly sort and aggregate data. And they may not be wanting to use a pivot table or something to get this data sorted and filtered. Which brings me to my last point about the broader picture of this dynamic array function. I would venture to say that this brings Excel more closer to SQL, because now you're basically applying formulas and functions to entire, the results of the formulas and functions are being applied to the entire column versus having to return one single value from the formula. And if you are a user of pivot tables, I would argue that you're already kind of doing this with a lot of your analysis. So in pivot tables, you have calculated fields where you can take, if you have a column with sales and you have a problem column with cost, you can quickly create a calculated field that is profit, which is simply sales minus cost. And then that profit calculated field gets applied to all rows in your pivot table, no matter how you slice and dice your data. Same thing also applies in Tableau. You have calculated fields there. However, I think in Tableau, the user interface is not as like simple as Excel, where you can just literally just click on the column names to create your calculated field. Whereas I think in Tableau, you actually have to write out the formula, which again, feels more like SQL, because in SQL, you're basically creating these user-defined columns from scratch and naming them as you please. And that's why I think this functionality in Excel brings the functionality of SQL closer to Excel, because I think perhaps the use case of Excel is being kind of transitioned to feel more like SQL in terms of the types of work that's being done on the platform, which is not surprising to me, because I feel like the more you learn Excel and the more you learn about data, the more you realize how data has to be in a format that's meant for processing in a database, and knowing how to write formulas, writing calculated fields that apply to the entire data set is important. And I think these dynamic array functions kind of are a step in that direction. So I definitely think it provides more data literacy for people who are probably just used to using Excel or a spreadsheet for just putting in a list of data and not knowing about how to properly structure it and how formulas work on that spreadsheet. So it's a step in the right direction. Overall, I think dynamic array functions are a way to help new people who want to create formulas quickly, and also a way for power users who want to quickly sort their lists and find unique data sets, find unique values, because that's the first thing that I thought about when seeing the new dynamic array functions. The two that stood out to me the most were just using sort and unique, because I'm constantly doing remove duplicate values and then sorting a list manually by using like keyboard shortcuts instead of having a formula that does that for me. So just a different way of thinking about how to do those really common Excel techniques. All right, so I'm going to mention, that kind of concludes the Excel portion of the episode. And I want to mention two things in the second half of the episode about other things I've come across. Typically, I talk about other podcast episodes I've come across, but today I want to talk about two things. One is a podcast, one is a conference, as a matter of fact. So I'm actually still getting through all the sessions here, but there was a online conference a few weeks ago. Obviously, I'm not sure if it was due to COVID or if it was just meant to be an online conference, but it was called SheetsCon 2020, and it was hosted by Ben Collins. Ben Collins is a longtime Google Sheets user, and I believe he's also a Google certified developer or something like that, or Google developer expert. And basically, it's to show that he is an approved, certified developer, or what do you want to call it, using the G Suite. And he put on this conference, and it's a conference dedicated solely to Google Sheets and how you can use Google Sheets to basically be more productive. And it took place on March 11th or 12th, and it's completely free to watch all the replays. I'm actually in the middle of watching all the videos, so I may have more feedback about this in the coming weeks after I watch all the sessions. But very, very relevant sessions for anyone that's doing work with spreadsheets, especially Google Sheets. And there's a bunch of big names as well in terms of the speakers. Just wanted to look at some of the sessions that interested me. No code apps and Google Sheets, obviously a very big topic close to my heart. Let me see here. Using Google Sheets to master your money, so probably how Google Sheets can help you with budgeting. Another favorite topic of mine, automation with apps script. I've been doing a lot of work with Google apps script recently to sync Google Sheets with Coda, where I work. Moving on up from Google Sheets to BigQuery, that's also a really fun topic, because once you are working with a lot of data, big data, as they say, you're probably getting out of Google Sheets because of performance issues and moving to BigQuery, which is meant for processing millions and millions of rows of data. How to be a freelance Google Sheets developer, something I know pretty well because I used to be one. So just really excited to watch all these replays, and pretty excited to see this coming up, see this every year, because it's completely free and just really awesome job by Ben Collins for putting this on. And that's kind of the first thing I want to talk about for this episode, is just checking out Sheets on SheetsCon.com. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably into spreadsheets, and this is probably a really good resource for you to check out in order to increase your knowledge and see how other people are using spreadsheets to be more productive. Okay, the second thing I want to talk about was from a podcast I listened to primarily because I was playing around with Craft CMS, which is a CMS platform for building websites. And I found out that some of the people that are building a lot of Craft CMS, Craft websites, run a podcast called DevMode FM. I'm not sure if I mentioned this podcast before on Dear Analyst, but I haven't done as much Craft CMS work as I'd like to, since I'm still kind of steeped into WordPress these days. But I have built some basic websites with Craft CMS. And what I love about this podcast is that they dive into not just things about Craft, but other things related to web development, even interviewing. And this is an episode that was more about kind of like finding a job in web development. It was with a Paulo Elias, who formerly worked at IDEO. And around minute 19, they were talking about what they would look for in a new web dev a candidate, what kind of qualities they would need from a candidate to just kind of like be really productive on the job. And they were talking about how earlier in the episode, they're talking about how there's some basic things you need to know, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, all that kind of stuff. But then they're saying that there are times when you want someone that just knows, has deep domain knowledge about a subject. So in this case, many different websites are now built with React. And they were talking about how it's great to just want to hire a React developer to work on a React project. And that sometimes is like all you need. Maybe it might be a short-term project. But as Paulo was talking in the episode, actually, I'm not sure if this was Paulo who said it, but the host of the podcast, I guess you could say, was talking about how long-term, if you want someone who can basically adapt to the changing environment in a web development role, just being a superstar with React and knowing how to build websites with React is not going to get you far as an employee of the company and might not get you very far in your career. What he was saying is that the most important quality that he looks for with hiring, like a, I guess a web dev person, is willingness to learn and change. And I think he also said specifically, not just having the ability to learn and change, but also having the willingness to learn and change. And there's a key distinction there, because some people have the ability and you can push them to learn and change, but the best employees, the best candidates, the best web dev employees are ones that want to learn and change as platforms come and go, as technology changes, as client requirements change. Those are the people that really succeed in this type of role. And those who are focused on, I only program in React or I only work with COBOL, can't go beyond these four walls. Those are the ones that have the hardest time with furthering their careers. And I don't know why, but I just love hearing these kind of conversations, because it's kind of pointing back to the higher level precept, if you will, that the only constant thing in life is change. And I know this is getting kind of like a little frou-frou, but it's totally true. Like, just being able to constantly think and change and adapt to your new environment is really key. And that's basically how innovation, novelty, risks can be taken. And this concept of having the willingness to change and adapt is brought up in so many other episodes I've listened to in the past, I don't know, year or so. A couple episodes ago, I was talking about the StarCraft II episode where they interviewed Toby Lucky from Shopify. And the whole episode was basically about how, as a StarCraft player, like, you have to know how to adapt to new situations, learn quickly, and be able to throw away kind of like your original concepts about something and just be able to adapt the new environment. And that happens a lot in the game of StarCraft. But that's also the key quality that Toby looks for when they're hiring new employees at Shopify. This concept was also mentioned in the on the Syntax FM podcast. Wes and Scott were also talking about being able to like learn new skills really quickly to stay up to date on all the new technologies that are coming, especially when it comes to building software applications and building websites. So the fact that I've heard this multiple times, and I would say the original podcast person, author, whoever that has talked about this, in my mind, is was Tim Ferriss. And I think he was the one that really showed me the light back in 2009, I believe, when I first read The 4-Hour Workweek. But it's just like being able to adapt and learn a new skill, knowing that what you know today may not be applicable to tomorrow. And I think that's like kind of like what makes like learning so fun, at least for me, is that like I know that I'm never going to be a master in all these different subjects, but like just wanting to learn these new subjects is like now I can start to see how everything is kind of connected to each other across software, spreadsheets, politics, the economy, just being able to draw those lines. I just, even right now, I'm just thinking, like, as I'm talking about how, like, this episode talked about how to hire a web dev, React developer, like, willingness to learn is the most important thing. I'm already drawing these lines between other podcasts I listen to, between what I've originally read in the 4-Hour Workweek. And those are kind of like the meta skill beyond just knowing React or knowing JavaScript is willingness to learn new technologies that are thrown at you from clients, from your colleagues, from, you know, the industry. So yeah, I think the key takeaway here is just be open to learning and knowing that whatever you know today, if you think you're an expert in something, there's always more to learn. Even with like Excel, like I'm constantly learning about new things like dynamic array functions, which I had no idea were so powerful. Still not sure about its usage in my spreadsheet life, but can see it being very powerful for other users. Approaching 40 minutes now, so I'm going to wrap up this episode here. Stay safe out there, and thank you for listening.